usually open the meeting with a few comments, but before I do that, this is really a bigger turnout than I anticipated, and I'm very thankful for so many people coming. Number one, since we have so many, I want to make sure that I just take one question from everybody before we start taking a second question from people a second time, so we get as many questions participating as we can. And the other thing is, if I come up to you and you're going to ask a question, I'm not coming up to you to intimidate you. I'm coming up to make sure I can hear your question. So don't get mad at me if I'm too close. And things like that. So I usually start, since this is a Wednesday, gotta think what day it is. Anyway, most Wednesdays I'm in Washington, D.C., so I like to tell you we're not in session, so I'm not playing hooky from stuff there. And the other thing is that this is the best way to have dialogue with your constituents, representing the government, and my talking to you and you talking to me. But I see a few thousand people every year, but I don't see 3 2/10 million constituents I have. So I'm saying this to you, you're here. When you can't see me, and for everybody that's not here, you need to communicate with me by email or telephone or postal mail, however you want to do it. And since I just told you government's a two-way communication, you ought to expect a response. And if something falls through the cracks, let me know so I can get you a response, because you're entitled to one. And I don't want to come back here next year and you said, and tell me next year I didn't answer your letter this year. That's not a way to get an answer, so let me know. The other thing is that for you folks asking questions, you don't have to worry about an inappropriate question. So don't worry about, I haven't had an inappropriate question at any of these meetings, so just don't worry about it. Whatever's on your mind to ask me, if you want to ask something about me personally, that's all right as well. And let's just have a conversation here for a while. Now, I don't know whether any of you folks worry about all the most social media or not, but if you do, you can follow me on Twitter at Chuck Grassley, Instagram at Senator Chuck Grassley. I do those things. If you do a Facebook, my staff does Facebook, but we get a lot of communication by Facebook as well. So any way you want to do that. If any of you want to get in the weeds on anything I'm involved in, you go to grassley.senator.gov, and that stuff is my, most everything I'm involved in is on that, things of that nature. So I think we're ready for questions. I'm going to have you, this gentleman at the end, have to do two questions, so we're going to take one of his questions. Now, he said GOP means the Republicans. For the year 2020, you can accuse Republicans of that, because quite frankly, everything that passed during the time we had the virus was pretty much 90 to 10. It was very bipartisan, because of the virus, and because we did things that we'd never repeat again, because I think we learned a lot of lessons. And when we shut down the economy, 22 million people were unemployed. People lost confidence in the economy. We were dealing with this new virus, and quite frankly, nobody knew what was coming down the road. So we shut things down. I said we wouldn't do that again. And then immediately shut them down. You got to take care of 22 million people that the government employed. They weren't unemployed because of their own fault. And you had to get confidence in the economy, and you had to appropriate money to fight the virus. So during that year, I think it's perfectly legitimate for you to blame both Republicans as well as Democrats for irresponsible spending, but I just told you why we had to do that. And I'm sure we'll never shut down the economy again. That's one of the things that makes Iowa and South Dakota and a few other Midwestern states look good. The governors didn't shut down the economy like we did at the federal level. Then you get into a new Congress and a new political party taking over, and they have plenty of people in their own party warn them about inflation, and you've got to cut. You shouldn't be spending any more money, but they decide to spend more money. And if it wasn't for Manchin of West Virginia, a senator, the only Democrat that stood up and said we can't spend any more money. So you had 50 Republicans and one Democrat that said no more of it, and otherwise we'd have $4.5 trillion more spent. So then getting back to your question, because that was only an explanation of where we are, I would say two things that need to be done, and then I'll go on to the next question, whoever wants to raise their hand, and that is that one thing I'm going to give you that is my answer, but it's not going to solve your economy problem that you want to solve, because it takes a long time to get a constitutional amendment balance in a budget, but I have voted three times for the federal government to do like state governments do, have a constitutional requirement against deficit spending. And the other thing would be just to freeze things across the board. Okay, that gentleman there.
You're going to let me talk to the mic. Okay, so I do have a lot of questions, but I'm glad you only said one. So the people in D.C. have sent $13.6 billion of our money to Ukraine while not protecting our U.S. border. Over 1 billion have come in so far in 2022. Why are we not spending that money to protect our border first?
That's it. I would applaud to that question as well. And after inflation, that's the second question I most get at these town meetings. First of all, we should have even more concern about the border across the South. And as much as we have between Ukraine and Russia, that's really two separate questions, but I'm going to answer the one question. I guess your question is just about the border. Okay. So then sometimes the question comes like this at my town meeting. Senator, why don't you do something about the border? My answer to that question is the same way I'm going to answer your question. We have plenty of laws in this country that say you can't come to America without our permission. Now, just to show that we're a good company, a good country, inviting immigrants, we take about 1 million people to come here legally. Now maybe some of you don't even like that, but we at least have people that come here in large numbers within our law. But we pass laws over a long period of time that you can't come to America without our permission. So, we pass the laws. Congress doesn't carry out the laws. You study the government, the president enforces the laws. So, quite frankly, we We have a president that doesn't want to enforce the immigration law. What do you do in that case? You can impeach it. If the House wants to impeach the president because you don't like what they're doing, you can do that, but you know that isn't going to happen to this president. So you've got a president that basically says we have an open border. And by saying that, you just don't stop people from coming to the country. Now, you think it's bad today. On May 23rd, they do away with what they call the use of Title 42, which keeps people out of the country because of health reasons, and that's connected to the virus. And Trump put that in. That's really a 1944 law, but it isn't used as well as Kelly, but it was legitimately used when we had the virus, and he used it, and this president carried it over for a year, but he won't stand it. So instead of 6,000 people coming into this country, it's estimated to get about 18,000 a day. The Border Patrol can't protect the border because they're spending their time doing administrative work for people they arrest, and they don't arrest everybody. Because we don't know how many people come in here, don't even see a Border Patrol agent. So we've got to enforce it. Now, I would vote for more money to finish the wall, but the first day in office, he stopped building the wall. Right then, and now we did that, not build the wall, but he had to pay millions of dollars for penalties to the company because they weren't in court, or because they were the penalty, they don't carry out the contract. This is a anyway, so the answer to your question is the president isn't enforcing the law. And you can go to my website and read some of my comments that I made to the press or to the floor of the Senate on that very subject. Who's got the next? I better look over here a little bit. Anybody got a question over here?
Yeah. I think
the news
has been a lot of mistakes made by our president. Who's in the middle of the game? Because I don't think he's running the country. Who's running
the country? I can give you, it's all worth it, I hope, that who's really running our country, because he doesn't think the president is doing that. I can only answer your question in a general way, but it's not with anything, with any certainty, because I don't know what goes on in the White House every day. But I assume that people like Susan Rice that are carried over from the Obama administration and just dozens and dozens of other people from the Obama administration that spread throughout the bureaucracy as well as the White House, that's the best answer I can give your question. But these are powerful people. They're people that believe government ought to be very aggressive and do everything within the Constitution and the laws that allow them to do it, and sometimes they do things that the law doesn't allow them to do it, like, for instance, just the judge that overturned the decision that the president said you've got to wear a mask on every airplane flight you go on. So the check, as long as we've got confidence in the checks and balances of government, maybe there's not so much to fear, but then not every time that the law is abused as it gets to the courts, but several times this president's been knocked down by the courts because he did something he didn't have the authority to do. Who's the next question?
Thank you, sir. Basically, my question is with myself and the 232,000 other veterans in the VA system in Iowa. Title 38 was written to help veterans and make the administration do it. But in there, under 111, under transportation and reimbursement, the Senate put in there that the veteran has to have $3 deducted from every route, one day route, going to the VA hospital, all this money. Now, $3 is not much. It makes $18 a month to max. But you times that with 232,000 veterans. Over a year's time, we're talking millions and millions of dollars that are taken from veterans. Where's the money?
two things. Either it's one of two things. It either goes back into the federal treasury and next year rolled out for appropriations just like any other money that comes into the federal treasury, or maybe, but I don't know for sure, this law might say that that $3 deducted goes directly to the VA, and I don't know which way it is, but one or the other has got to be the case. Well, there will be accountability. Well, remember, when the VA spends money, you've got to spend it according to law. So you've got accountability that way. Or if the Congress appropriates money out, there comes accountability to do what the Congress decides to do.
Why do you expect the taxpayers to do that?
Well, I can't answer the question. Maybe the law was made before the fact of Congress.
I don't know.
I don't know, but I look it up if you want to do, but I can't answer your question. Because you don't expect me to remember something, why I wrote or something. He's just trying to do a bad job. But you do ask a legitimate question. Federal gasoline tax. And so probably 60 or 70% of the money was for highways and bridges. But in this bill, there was $65 billion for what we call broadband. That's what you're talking about. Now, I can't tell you how, I can tell you a lot of the specific figures on money that's coming for the locks and dams, $823 billion. I was the worst of the 50 states in the 23% of our bridges that are down. I can tell you there's about $400 million in it for Iowa bridges. And I can tell you there's about $4 billion to be spent over the next 5 to 6 years for our highways. But when it comes to the internet and the broadband, all I can tell you is there's $65 billion in the bill. And that money has to be spent for the priority of unserved or underserved areas before it's spent anyplace else. So since Iowa would fall very heavily into unserved or underserved areas, Iowa's going to get a big chunk of that money, but I can't give you a figure. I would say we were told last August by Senator Wicker of Mississippi this problem, that the maps that show what was, that you get from the FCC that shows what's underserved or unserved are not very accurate maps, and they have to come up with better maps to show the unserved areas. And I think that was supposed to be done in March, and I'm not sure it was done in March, so maybe any time now, but not before those maps are completed. Next question.
I'm going to tell my wife I'm sorry.
Good, thank you. Tell her you're loving it. What is Congress doing to ensure that our private tech sector is empowered to defend against the expected increase in cyber attacks amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
This is just general. It's not about a specific country or not just the United States, but what we're doing in the United States to protect against cyber attacks. Okay. Here's again, I can give you a lot of information, but I'm not sure that I can be real definitive in answering the question, because I know a lot about, in the Department of Homeland Security, hiring more people and more resources to be on top of it. But it's not just a government issue. Under our laws, every company, every utility, you know, almost everything involved, there's a lot of responsibility for make sure that people that can be attacked, and particularly if it's a problem for national security or a problem with the economic security, a lot of this rests with the companies to make sure that they've done everything. Now, that would also include communication with the Department of Homeland Security to make sure that whatever information or help they can get from the federal government, they get that help. But it isn't just an issue that the federal government is going to work on, but the federal government's got to be on top of it enough to push everybody, particularly if it's a utility or our locks and dams, or our, locks and dams would be commerce, but electricity could be our big dams that have electricity. I don't know. I can't think of all the things that maybe could create real economic harm. The government's got a big responsibility. You see that those people, either by themselves or a cooperation with the government, is doing all they can to make sure we protect against attacks. That's the best I can answer your question. But there's a lot more resources pointing to it. I wish I could say X number of hundreds of millions of dollars or billions. I don't know exactly what that would take because I'm not on the appropriations committee, but I know there's just a lot of effort in that direction. But it's also a private sector issue we've got to deal with. It's a private sector responsibility as well. Okay, next question.
Say you look a lot younger in person than you do in C-SPAN. I
Russia can't take Ukraine. Why don't we go in there to stop?
Well, if you said we go in, you'd be sending American troops in. And, well, yeah, but the NATO is a defense organization. It's got to be attacked before the NATO would operate as a whole. Now, the United States would decide to go in there, but we aren't doing that. Or England could decide to go in, or Germany could decide to go in. But if you want 27 countries of NATO to go in, that could only happen if they're attacked before what we call Article 5 kicks in. It's a responsibility to respond to that. It's only been used once, and it didn't end up in any warfare as a result of it. But when 9/11 happened in New York City, Article 5 kicked in, and all these countries, if we had been further attacked, they were going to join together to help the United States. So, let me see if I get back to your question now. Oh, the United States, I think when you say Europe and NATO do more, you'd be in regard to the size of their economy. I mean, the little country of Estonia would do a lot less. It happens that they're probably doing more according to the size of their economy than what Germany's doing. But you kind of have to measure it in proportion. I think that the United States, the only problem I have with the United States was started 6 months too late. And even now, as I hear reports on television, you know, they're going to give them some howitzers or some equipment that maybe they haven't ever used. We got to train them and get it over there now. When I read the morning paper today, that Russia's starting to move in this part where they, you know, down in the south and the east, where they're just now gathering everything together to put on a big push, that push is going on. We're talking about training people how to use our equipment. I don't know. It kind of is, it makes me pessimistic. On the other hand, just think of this. I'll bet our country, I can't prove this, but I'll bet our leadership thought that this thing, Russia's going to take this over 2 or 3 days. And we were even telling the President Zelensky that he needs to get out and go to London and set up a shadow government. So, you know, we can keep hope alive and stuff like that. And then his not leaving Ukraine, and then the fighters fighting way beyond what we thought they were capable of doing. Now ought to give us hope that not only do you push back the Russians from where they were before this latest invasion half, but you push them back beyond where they were even when they took over a little bit in 2014. And I think we're going to get the equipment there. At least I think the decisions to get the equipment there. Because we used to just give what you call defensive equipment. Now we're going to start giving some offensive equipment. But whether it'll be soon enough, I guess the bravery of the people themselves speaks a lot. And then he gives us some more time than what we ever anticipated we never had. Yeah, next question.
Hi. I would just like some reassurance from you. The division in our country is not going to be permanent. What do you see happening to help our country come back together? Are we looking for a certain type of leader? What skills should that person have?
I think in our system of government, the skill that anybody has is, unless you're in the judicial branch of government, that is Congress or the President of the United States, you've got to have the willingness under our system to compromise. Yeah, I think that's the only hope. Can I address this question just a little bit different way? If some of you still got questions, you can have some patience with me. And this is not against anything you said, because your question was perfectly proper. But I sometimes get a question similar to hers like this. Sometimes it's pretty sharp like this. How come you guys can't get along in Washington, D.C.? In other words, too much partisanship. I think that's what you're referring to, aren't you?
I just want some reassurance. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not the country of Europe.
Yeah. The only, on Now, I can only speak to differences within Congress. When there's differences out here, I'm not sure I can address that, except from this standpoint, if there's our society's a little less civil today than it was 30 years ago. If you believe in representative government, some of that's going to be reflected in Congress. You know, maybe it should be, but I think if you believe in representative government, you expect what your constituents are feeling to be respected by Congress. In this way, I guess in this particular way, you'd rather not have to be respected. And maybe it shouldn't be, but I think you're going to have some of that. The only thing I would point out for this question about too much partisanship is the fact that, yes, there is too much partisanship, but there isn't as much as the average person would think, because controversy makes news. And so you read about all of this controversy going on in Washington. So I kind of like to use an example of Senator Durbin, who's an entirely opposite end of me on political philosophy. But we worked together for 4 years with Trump to sign a bill called justice reform, I guess is the word I would use. And so here's one liberal Democrat, one conservative Republican working together to do a conference. But nobody knew that we were doing anything. But when we have differences of opinion on a judge, or we have a difference of opinion on immigration, it always pops up. So you read about Grassley and Durbin disagreeing on stuff, so you think we never get along. But we got along on a bill that passed 82-12. It took us 87-12. And it took us, I'll bet it took 3 or 4 years to get that bill to the floor and get it passed. You know, just one example. It was a complicated bill. But so I just hope you take that into consideration, that there is too much partisanship. It isn't as bad as what you think, because you watch Fox News and you read all about it. You watch CNN and you see it from the other angle, and MSNBC, and so it's not good, but I don't think it's as bad as a lot of people think. Next question.
Senate. I had the press in cahoots with them, trying to discredit everything that Senator Johnson and I were trying to do on the Hunter Biden investigation. And now they have to admit that we were right. You can tell by reading their stories, they just hate to admit that. And even the New York Times. So we started August 2019. The word laptop connected with Hunter Biden didn't become public until a year and 2 months later. No, a year and a month later, October 2020. I actually got a copy of the laptop July of last year. So in the meantime, we had all these bank statements that I'll tell you in just a minute, but those bank statements kind of back up what you learned from the laptop. And so what we have learned is that Hunter Biden and his uncle, James, the brother of the president, were in cahoots with Chinese business people that were connected with an energy company called CEFC. That those people were Communist Party members, had connection with the military of China, that Hunter got the $5 million, James got $1 million, and all this stuff, you have to go to my website, because all this stuff is in three speeches that I and Senator Johnson gave within the last month on the Senate floor. So then, not only did $5 million to one man, but James Biden had a credit card he could use and used in several different countries. And then there's several vouchers or checks or whatever you want to call them that would give for several, I don't know whether it was several months or went into a couple of years, where they got Hunter Biden got $100,000 a month, his uncle got $65,000 a month, and I don't suppose the congressional record or my website shows these examples but I had charts on the Senate floor that showed these transactions, and we got these from the bank, not from the laptop. So I think we know enough about these people in China that they were dealing with that is concerning, hasn't compromised our national security, but I can't say that yet. I was on television last week, and that's what Jesse Waters wanted me to be able to say, and I said I just can't say it because I don't know. Now the investigation is not over. I'm going to follow the facts where they lead us, and the money where it leads us until we get done. But we haven't done yet. That's the best I can help you at this point. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
Next question. Yes, there's two people here I see, so I'm going to start out with you. And then I forget sometimes, and I see a hand over here, and I go over here, and I'm going to forget you, but I don't think there's anybody I want to forget.
I know. How long will it take before we get our oil wells in this country pumping so we can say the heck with Ford on them?
A week ago, I would have said not until we got a new president, but last week he seemed to indicate that they were going to give some some leases or whatever they have to do. So maybe that makes a difference, but I have to see it to believe it. And there's a lot of red tape connected even getting that done. But if you'd asked me a week ago, I'd say you probably would have asked the question, what are you going to do about high gas prices? And about half of the inflation is the increase in gas prices. And so consequently, you know, when your first day in office, you stop the pipeline, you stop the drilling, you increase regulations on fracking, you tell the banks not to loan money now.
expect that gas would go up. And then when the price goes up, people in Saudi Arabia and Venezuela to bring in their oil instead of doing what we can here. And how contrary that is to their environmental policies. Because we have very good regulations to stop pollution from our energy industries, but these other countries don't have such rules. So you not only import their oil, but you import their greenhouse gases and all that stuff. So I don't see the consistency of it, but if you want to get, I tell the president right now, if you want to get gas prices down, just reverse everything you did last year.
So that you're able to market your cattle within 14 days.
That's basically what it does. I sat down, I can't see you. Does that kind of give you the update you want?
It's a start.
Does? Okay, next question.
Hey, I'm Channel 2. Can you talk about your work to bring over-the-counter hearing aids to the market? Over-the-counter hearing aids.
Say that again.
Over-the-counter hearing aids. Your work to bring it to the market.
Oh! This is a perfect example. This is a perfect example of some legislation that some a woman from Massachusetts that I'm trying to disagree with on everything else except this issue. She and I worked to get this bill passed so you can have over-the-counter centers of hearing aids, so you don't have to pay $5,000 to $10,000 to get a hearing aid. You can get them for a lot cheaper. Can you believe it? We passed this legislation February of, must have been 2018. And how long does it take FDA to get the regulations out? They were not even out when this new president was sworn in. So she and I got together and wrote to the FDA or to the president, get these regulations out. Now, I've been told by the Secretary of HHS within the last month that these would be out within a month. Now, that month has passed, and your question indicates to me that those regulations still aren't out. But I don't think there's any problem anymore as long as we got it. Now, I have this speculation of why it took 4 years. Yeah, 4 years now to get where we are with the bill that passed 4 years ago. Because I remember when she and I was working on this legislation, there's four companies that would come to our office and tell us how god awful this is going to be. You aren't going to have these tests and everything you have to have today to get some sort of a hearing aid. And they were just so concerned about how their patients were going to be, could be abused by these over-the-counter sales of these cheaper hearing aids. What they were telling me is they were concerned about what our bill might do to their business. So obviously I didn't listen to them. We got the bill passed, and I think it got passed unanimously, I believe. But anyway, it didn't have any trouble in the past. Now getting the regulations out, are those same four companies having some sort of influence in the White House or in FDA that keeps it from happening? I may have thought that that's the reason for the slowness of it, but now that the Secretary of HHS told me that they're going to be right out, and maybe they're out and I don't know it, then you ought to be able to buy a cheap hearing aid if you want a cheap one. Okay, next question.
There's two ladies right here.
The one question is the bottle bill. People are throwing away their cans, I've been told, because there's no place to take them. We're supposed to have a new redemption center. Well, I went to the liquor store, Ivy Liquor Store. I always take back my cans and bottles there. I wash them out, put them back in the box, just like they want me to. So I was there like a month ago to the liquor store to restock. And I was told there's a liquor store here in Denison, and it's behind Dollar Tree. So I go there. There's no sign. Doors are locked. And there's, 100 or more cans and bottles beside the building. So I called the number that the liquor store gave me so I could take back my cans, and there's no answer. It says temporarily out of service. The phone number. So the closest I think I could go is to Carol, but businesses that sell alcohol, with Iowa law, they are required to take back your cans. So why am I having a problem taking back cans? And I went to Walmart, the machine didn't work, so I took my bottles into the customer service. They said, we don't own those machines. So they won't give me a refund. But they sell them.
I could answer your question, but we are not dealing with that in Washington, D.C.
That's true.
That's being dealt with. Well, I think I should hear my constituents out.
But the Iowa law says they have to take it back.
Yeah. So can
so
you
why
visit?
Are you refusing?
Can you visit? There's a bill going through the Iowa legislature. I don't know that because I know everything is going on in the Iowa legislature. But this has had a lot of press attention. So I know just what I read in the newspaper. There's a bill. So, and it's through both houses, but there's a difference. So they're trying to work out between the House and Senate.
Yeah.
But you need to talk to your state legislator.
Okay.
Next lady.
Why are we not getting the rest of the Americans out of Afghanistan? How many are deaf? Why are flights flying at half-cut staff until they come home?
The last question would be, I don't know if that's a presidential decision or a congressional decision when flight staff fly at half-staff. But the other question you gave, I can say, if I ask the federal government, or the president, or the secretary of defense, they would say a few hundred. But I heard on television somebody that I don't know if he's, I forget if he's Afghan or American, said that there's thousands of people, of American citizens, that are over there yet. So I'm just telling you what I know. And all I'm saying is it's a disgrace that we handled this evacuation the way we did. Because when we gave up that big airfield that was inside, we gave up everything, every protection we could have had to get every American out. And I don't know why that was given up. We walked out of it at midnight. And the Afghan government didn't even know we were. And the people that took over Afghanistan, the Taliban marched right in to that air base and got it. It's a terrible blot on our history that we would leave a country and leave American citizens over there. So your question is, I presume that both within the government and within good-hearted Americans that are trying to work outside of the government to get a few people out now and then, but I don't have any update for you. And if they need any help by Congress to get it, I'll be there to help.
We're done
already? Okay. Who wants to be the last one?
Is there any concern among the congressmen in Washington about the election and the integrity of the future election coming up?
There's this concern expressed by a bill that Pelosi pushed through the House of Representatives that would do away with all state laws that have governed elections for 240 years and have one federal law. And they say that will take care of the problem. But then you have another problem when you have one national law, that if there's fraud in Chicago, it would devalue your vote here in the United States, in Iowa. Whereas when you have 50 different state laws, then you have fraud in Chicago, it doesn't devalue your vote. Besides, the bill she had included taxpayer financing of elections, as an example, and it would have done away with the Constitution is very clear that the state legislatures control the election of what it's narrowed down to the electors that elect the president. But if you're going to decide something for the electors for a president, you're going to decide it for all of your elections that are going to be held that day. So it affects every office in the United States, even though the Constitution refers to just state legislatures deciding who
Yes.
What's happening to our social security?
Can you talk up, please?
Pardon?
Louder.
Oh, social security. Are they going to steal the rest of our money?
Okay, what? Can you?
Social security wants to get the rest of the money.
Oh, well, what your question about getting the rest of the money is Social Security. Let me answer it this way, and if this doesn't answer your question, you tell me. I'll see what you. This is a long answer, Jim. There is 2 6/10, I think, let's say 2 4/10 trillion dollars that has been built up since 1984 till today. And that's starting to spend down now because there's less payroll tax coming in than going out of Social Security. So nothing has to be done until 2034. Now, if we're crazy enough to wait till 2034, that's waiting too long. But when 2034 comes, that 2 4/10 trillion dollars is going to be used up. And then the law of 1936 says that you only get what the payroll tax brings in. So if you're at 2034, you're still here, you'll only get 77% of what you're getting now.
What happened to all the money the Congress takes coming out of the fund?
Well, this is history, but it isn't affecting your Social Security check at all. But what happened is, what you're referring to is, and it happened in 1967 or 68, Johnson, well, before that date, we used to have, the budget used to have the general fund, the Social Security fund, the Medicare fund, the road fund, and every other fund. We still keep those funds, but you're referring to President Johnson putting all of that money into what we call I'll call it a concentrated budget, because he thought that the budget, when you give a bottom line of whether or not you got a deficit or you got a surplus, it ought to be shown on one document instead of adding up all these other funds. But now that's the rationale he used, but let me tell you really why he did it that way. He wanted to cover up the cost of the Vietnam War, because there was more money in the Social Security Fund and all these other funds, and didn't have to raise taxes to pay for the war. So you still have the separate funds, but since it's all, every federal dollar, tax dollar that comes in, including the payroll tax for Social Security, it's all in on one document. It makes it look like we're spending our Social Security money for something else. Okay, thank you all very much.